If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
There's no property that changes quicker than multifamily. You have to stay on top of maintenance issues, tenant issues. It's a 30-day business every month. It's not a collect for 5 days and be done.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Spencer Culler is a real estate investor, business owner, author, speaker, and current director of commercial acquisitions. He has developed an extensive background in commercial, multifamily, and residential real estate, and has also spent several years as a home builder. Spencer, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. Pleasure's all mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And really, how did you get there?
Sure. Well, I started working a corporate job for a software company, and on the side, got into real estate investing and was building some homes on the side as well. Pretty soon that kind of outgrew my corporate job and decided to make the jump and really haven't looked back.
I mean, that's pretty great. So how did you get started in home building? I mean, was that just a one day on a whim, I'm going to go build home?
No, well, I'd grown up in kind of construction family. My family owned rock quarries and a ready-mix concrete plant. And my dad built his own home. And then my brother built his own home. And I wanted a home and couldn't afford to go out and just buy one. So I built it and got the equity by the builder side. And then we decided to start building some for other people.
Wow. That's cool. So then what happened once you built homes, you went off and you started building homes for other people. When did you get the idea that there's more out there and that you needed to scale?
Yeah, well, we went through that big real estate meltdown in 2008, 2009, right. And we kind of saw it start to come with some of the houses were sitting on the market longer. And so we sold all of our inventory and thought, there's got to be a better way than this. We're getting tired of you buy something, you build it, you wait till the end to find out what you're going to make, if anything. And then as soon as you sell it, you're out of business until your next one's started. So we were looking for something that was more long-term, more cash flow driven. That's where we got into more of the commercial real estate side. We started with a retail center that was about 22,000 square foot. Learned a lot from that, decided we hated retail. And then we started looking for apartment complexes and started there with a 40-unit complex that we bought for about $1.2 million and raised $250,000 on that.
Wow. So you bought a 40-unit, and then what happened, I guess, from that point? Do you still own that 40-unit? Or
we don't. We actually went through a couple third-party property management companies that were doing terrible. So we decided if we're going to do this, we're going to do it all the way in. So I started my own property management company and started managing the property. Within a year, we had the occupancy up with the waiting list. We'd raised rents and created enough value. We were able to do a cash out refi. We put in $250,000. Pulled out $350,000 on the cash out refi, continued to own it, took that money, added with some other investor money and went out and bought a 72-unit complex. Did kind of the same thing, bought a 44-unit complex with that, and then sold 72 and the 44 and bought 236-unit property. So, and now we're selling that. We're probably going to buy 700-plus units.
That's awesome. Can we rewind a little bit here and talk about your horrible experience with your couple property management companies?
Sure.
Were there some red flags or maybe that you learned through that experience that you could help us possibly avoid making the same mistakes?
Yeah. Well, I think there were. I'm kind of a control freak. So I think there are some things we did really well there. Right. One, we bought it right. We stuck to our fundamentals on buying and we bought it right. But thought we could just turn that over to a third-party property management company. What I found is that most third-party property management companies are great if you get above 150 units or so. where they can scale, they can put a solid property manager on there. But at the smaller properties, you just don't have the payroll available for a solid property manager on the property. So you usually sharing resources with another property. And there's just not as much incentive for third-party property management to keep their eyes on it the same way you would as the owner. So they struggled with, I think, the size of the property. And so one of the things that we probably could have done better was pick a property management company that was specific to managing that size of property and that didn't manage a ton of the huge ones.
Right.
Because once they're managing 200 unit or 300 unit properties, that's where their focus is. You're kind of a side project for them.
Right. And would you think that you could find that person? I'm thinking here locally, you know, some of the management companies that I think of would be people that manage single family projects.
Yeah.
Might do a 10 unit or a 15 unit.
I think that probably would have been a better way for us to start.
Right, right.
To be more successful through that. But the plus side is when we jumped in, we really learned the operations of the business. And I think that that really helped us to be able to scale and then know. I feel like now when we go into a project, we know exactly what expenses should be. We know exactly what staffing should be. We know so much more of the operations that it makes us more successful in these projects. But I think these small projects, 75, 40 unit, those are a lot easier to get started on for a new investor. And I think there's a ton of value in there, usually by inefficiencies of that ownership group. But it does take a lot more hands-on work.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What was it like when you launched the property management company? So you got rid of the bad apples and you guys said, hey, I'm going to launch our own management company. What was mm-hmm. what you've learned as you both launched and run that?
It'd be hard to quantify all the lessons. The employee side is the hardest. And just making sure you've got solid policies and procedures. You know, knowing the legal, knowing the fair housing guidelines, making sure you treat everybody exactly the same is really important. One of the hardest things on the property management side for new leasing agents or new property managers that are getting started is you get tenants coming in and they all want to be an exception. Well, as soon as you start making exceptions, you start getting in dicey area with fair housing guidelines. So that's something you've got to have systems in place and you've got to stick with them without making exception.
Right. Well, I guess I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. Like, what are some exceptions that you would say are common that people say, hey, I'm a different case because.
Yeah. Don't charge me late fees because I haven't done this before, or I'm going to be paid on the 10th, even though rent was due on the 1st. And those are things that come up every month.
Right, right. Yeah. And I guess that puts you in trouble if you let one person slide, you didn't charge them a late fee and you charge everybody else a late fee.
Yes. As soon as you start treating people differently, you open yourself up to problems.
Wow. Wow. That's wild. That's wild. So the employee side has been the hardest. What can you give us any insight on that front?
Yeah, I'd say it's also the most rewarding. It's just employees are all going through their own personal challenges and at home and stresses in their lives. And so getting consistency in things, especially when you're on smaller properties where you've got maybe a manager and a maintenance guy, one of them doesn't show up, that side of your property is closed for the day.
Right.
So that's why people talk about getting to a bigger scale as fast as you can, where you can get to that larger property. It's all about the payroll that you can have on that property and the redundancy. So you can have a leasing agent and a manager. So if one of them is out, your office is still open on that property, or you've got back, you know, multiple maintenance guys. So somebody doesn't show up, you're still taking care of work orders and things like that.
Right. Hey, do you guys invest only locally, or do you invest outside of your local market?
We've really tried to stay within a half a day's drive to any of our properties. So we're across 3 states right now, but it's all within 5 hours of our home office. We prefer that for now. We do have plans to kind of push that boundary a little further as we continue to grow. But to me, I like to have people on properties every day. Especially in the multifamily business, there's no property that changes quicker than multifamily. you have to stay on top of maintenance issues, tenant issues, collections. It's a 30-day business every month. It's not a collect for 5 days and be done, especially through the COVID-19 pandemic and everything. You can see that collections were slower. Or there's nothing in multifamily that's just sit back and let it happen.
Right. Unless you're a passive investor. I mean,
yes, yes. No, our investors, they like that. You know, they get the checks, they get the reports, and that's it. From the property management side and the operation side, it is a 365, 24-hour a day.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something that you make a good point there. There's no set the machine in motion and just watch it run. But yet, I think that's the ultimate goal as a business owner. You know, that's the goal as a business owner, is to say, hey, man, how do I develop systems so that I'm not just buying another job? How do we as syndicators develop systems and processes so we're not just adding more work to our plate? What are some of the things that you've done? I know you mentioned this earlier, was setting up systems and getting kind of your documentation and things like that, right? But how have you actively taken yourself out of the roles that would otherwise probably be choke points for your business?
Sure. Well, we've definitely invested in systems for our business. So we've invested in a really great investor management system to help with our fundraising and help with all the documentation and the reports. So it can be a lot more self-serve 24 hours a day for our investors. So that's helped a lot. We do a lot on the software side through the property management software. We've also built teams now and levels of managers and regional managers and things to take care of the property management side. But if you don't have your own property management company, that cuts a lot of the challenges out. So if you have really great third-party property management companies that you're working with, that's a huge time reduction area. So you can spend your time out finding deals or finding money for your deals or putting things together, because that's ultimately what drives the most value to most multifamily businesses.
Right. Yeah. You make a good point there, which is, you know, the finding money and finding the deals. Those are the two key things that if you're not property management, then you need to be doing that. So that's fantastic. We had talked offline and you'd said that you'd taken your initial equity investment of, what was it, $250,000?
Yeah.
And what's that worth today?
It's over $10 million today. That initial thing. Now that's been through multiple projects and 1031 exchanges and rollovers and cash out refis that were used to invest in other projects. But, you know, that's happened over a seven, eight year period.
That's awesome.
So one of the keys, I think, to scaling is starting small, but running the complete cycle on a project. So taking it from acquisition to repositioning to sale. So one of the things I thought when I was going to get started is we're just going to buy and hold things forever. And what I figured out is that we could take that money and turn it over a lot faster into new projects, and we could grow our equity quicker by doing that than we could holding everything for long term. Now, we still have long term assets that we hold, but we're pretty selective on the ones we hold long term versus more of a shorter term project.
What are some of the things that define what you guys may want to hold long term?
Size of the asset is definitely a big deal for us. So we've been really good at finding value in under 100 unit properties and taking those and coming in, buying them with a pretty aggressive timeline, putting capital improvements, increasing rents, and then selling them and exchanging them and turning them into larger projects for us. Right. So I think size, location, tenant base are all things. Long-term stability are things that we all look for, and whether we're going to hold short-term or long-term.
Right. And it sounds like the bigger the asset, the more likely you may be willing to hold for a longer period of time.
We are.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, a lot of the syndicators and people that we talk to, you know, they're like, okay, you know, 5 to 7 years, and they intend on selling it and then moving on and doing something, you know, just kind of wash, rinse, repeat. And I see value in both of those strategies. One being turn it, like you said, your equity and put it into something bigger. And then I also see value in, hey, don't sell the milk cow. Like,
yeah, there's definitely more risk when you sell an asset and are having to go on a quick timeline to either 1031 exchange it so you can defer those taxes on the gains and find a new asset because you're comfortable with the current asset you have. So you can do them either way. And we have done it either way using the cash out refi as a tool to go create that equity to go over, plus adding equity groups to that, starting new equity groups, and then doing the rolling over projects. But for us, we want to be flexible. So we had a project we bought last January 2020, and it was a 236 unit apartment complex. We did about $1.5 million in renovations, expected to hold the project long term.
Right.
But this March, we got an offer that was so strong on it that we had to take it. Right. We basically are doubling the value of that project in a little over a year. So we're going to take that. And what we're looking at is if we weren't flexible and if we didn't set up the financing the way we did, we would have taken a huge hit, not been able to sell that project. But what we're looking at is we've grown the equity so much, we can take it, put it in a higher quality asset and earn even a smaller cash on cash return. But overall, it's much larger. Plus, we're growing our equity in a larger asset.
Right. And it sounds like you can also trade up to a better asset class.
Right.
Reduces some management expenses.
Right. So we can go from a C class to a B plus or an A minus type property in a really strong area. So I think you can't be just totally rigid on this is what we're going to do. I think you have to have options. Right. And we try to set up every one of our projects so we've got three or four different exit strategies on that project. And then we adapt to the market some and what's going on in the marketplace.
You had mentioned that you had set up financing in such a way that the exit could be done without it being too painful. Obviously, we hear mm-hmm. a lot about prepayment penalties. Can't think of the other term that's used. It surrounds
the defeasance.
Yeah, there you go. That's
or the yield maintenance. Scary words of yield maintenance.
Yeah. And I had a gentleman come on here recently. They were selling an asset and they had $6.5 million in yield maintenance on the sale of one property. And which he said, hey, look, you know, we're still making it's a home run. We it still makes sense to sell, but that's an expensive lesson to learn.
It's a big pill. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So how are you setting up your financing in order to avoid having to pay those?
Sure. We focus on a pretty specific type of asset, and usually we're looking for something that we can come in and do a lot of value add right away through capital improvements and rent increases. So we want to be flexible on our terms. So a lot of them we're setting up either with bank financing or more of a variable rate Fannie Mae type product where the prepayment penalties are 1% or less on the project. So it allows us, most of our bank financing we set up with zero prepayment penalties. So you may pay 0.5% higher on rate, but if we're turning over quickly, it makes complete sense to pay higher on rate and have no prepay.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because whatever that prepay, you know, that 0.5%, you know, depending on the size of the project.
I think people don't factor in the prepay sometimes when they get financing. They're just looking at the rates. And sometimes you need to be willing to pay a little higher rate for the other terms in the loan.
Right, right. Yeah, I think your point there is excellent, which is pay attention to the terms as much as, and rate is part of those terms, but really pay attention to the other terms as well.
Yes.
You don't know. You don't know when 12 months later, you're going to double the value of the asset and say, okay, yes, we're selling.
Yeah, we're basically hitting our five-year goal in 1 year. So on that, for us, it's just an ROI calculation. But if we would have had a permanent Fannie Mae loan on there, we would have taken a couple $1 million hit on a prepay at least, or made it just not able to even entertain a sale. Because yes, somebody could have assumed the loan, but to try to find somebody that will assume it at that lower equity position, have to put a lot more down, lowers the return, so lowers what people are willing to pay for it. Right. Especially if you have a higher than market rate on these loans. I mean, we were doing a 1031 on a property and we had a deal worked out on about a $12.5 million property. Interest rates bottomed in like a 60-day period. This was back in 2019. And their prepayment penalty went up over $1 million in that 60 days. So by the time our deal closed, they couldn't sell their property anymore, because the prepayment penalty had gone up so much with rate. So I think being flexible, especially depending on your model and if it's going to be a long-term hold for you or a short-term.
Right, right. Man, that's great. That's great. You guys have done awesome stuff in a very, what seems like very short period of time. So I look forward to just tracking what you guys do and really yeah. where you go from here. This has been absolutely wonderful. Let's jump here into the final four if we can. The first question sure. is this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I think start small, start local. I think it's great when you get started to be able to be close to your properties in case things go wrong. You can quickly adapt. You can hire a different property management company if you need, but learn the business before you jump into something too big.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. That's a great one. Second question is this. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I read a lot. So I read a lot. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I'm always trying to learn more because there are some groups out there that are doing some incredible things. And I still learn something every day when I'm listening to those podcasts and just learning about different software, different tools you can use. I mean, there's different ways people look at the same type of project.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Well, we really focus on affordable housing, not in subsidized housing, but we focus on that sub $1,000 in rent per month, that asset that's deteriorated, hasn't had the best management. So we come in and really try to improve the asset. And we, while we're doing that, we're focusing on the area that that's located. So we'll get the police department involved. We'll get the community involved. We'll talk to the local schools. We'll get them involved in helping to revitalize the area that it's in. So we really try to make it local to where the properties, and yes, it helps our properties, but it also helps our tenant base. It helps the community that it's there. And one thing that we've been really successful at is every property that we go into, we make safer. And you'll see crime stats and that go way down after we take over. And it's that partnership between the city, the police departments, the school districts that make a huge difference.
Right. Yeah, that's fascinating. Love to hear at some point really how you strategize and build those, because I'm sure there's a process you've even built out for that.
It's a lot of work, but I think it's completely worth it.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Spencer, for listeners who want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Sure. They can visit us on our website at apartmentinvestors.com. We have a lot of investor education information out there. You can also schedule a free 15-minute consultation with us. So we'd love to have people join us. And I love talking to new investors all the time. So
fantastic. Spencer, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.